greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on iatrogenic disease right after this. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax, and a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed at 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it the government does to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, and 72% for a drink? Does the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on a pizza that they buy the ingredients to make, prepare, cook, serve, and then pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? Why is it that the government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Now, if you'd like to have more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, the Tax and Status School is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about iatrogenic disease. Now, iatrogenic means doctor-induced. It's the doctor that causes the disease. It doesn't have to be your doctor. It could be the nurse or a technician in a lab somewhere. It's a health professional who screws up and kills you. That's what an iatrogenic event is. Now, you don't have to be killed to have an iatrogenic event, and there are millions of these events. Events like you're supposed to get an aspirin, but they gave you codeine. Well, okay, so they made a mistake. It's not fatal. You got the wrong medication. You had a headache, and they thought you had the flu. So they gave you the wrong medication, and so, big deal. But it can get pretty serious, you know, if you're supposed to have a particular medicine, and they give you that particular medicine, but they give it to you in a quantity that you can't handle or assimilate, and it kills you. Or if they give you the wrong medication, you know, you're in the hospital being treated for heart disease and they give you some kind of a drug here, maybe for cancer, and you die as a result of it. Or in some cases, you don't die. You just become permanently impaired. You know, it causes you to have a stroke and maybe you're paralyzed for life. Or like the one guy, they cut his lung out and then found out after they cut it out that he didn't have cancer. Things like that. Those are called iatrogenic events. Sometimes they kill you, sometimes they don't. Now, what we're zeroing in on is the cases where they kill you. How many people die every year because the doctor, the nurse, or the lab technician screwed up and they gave you the wrong medication, or there was some other form of medical error? You got bed sores, infection, malnutrition, you were an outpatient, you had an unnecessary procedure done on you, or it was surgery related. Now, there are 8 categories of iatrogenic disease. Adverse drug reactions kill 106,000 people a year, documented. Medical errors kill 98,000 a year, documented. Bed sores kill 115,000 a year, documented. Infection kills 88,000 a year, documented. Malnutrition kills 108,800 a year, documented. Outpatients kills 199,000 a year, documented. Unnecessary procedures kills 37,136 people every year, documented. Surgery related, 32,000 dead, documented. Eight categories. They're documented by studies done by Lazarou, did the adverse drug reactions. The Institutes of Medicine did the medical error study. Bed sores was done by Barczak, and infection by Weinstein. Malnutrition by the Nurses Coalition. Outpatients by Starfield and Weingart. Unnecessary procedures was done by the HCUP. I don't know what that stands for, but you know it's important. It's HCUP. And surgery related, done by the AHRQ. I'd have to look up the syllabus and find out what that stands for. Eight categories of iatrogenic disease. Now, when you total those up, they come up to 783,936. Now, we saw that number before. And what we're trying to do is to correlate these numbers from various sources of information to see if any of them, you know, come up close, give us an inkling, give us a clue as to which numbers we can rely upon, which numbers are true. Now, we could have an even higher death rate by using Dr. Lucien Lepes, L-E-A-P-E-S, Lepes, 1997 medical and drug error rate of 3 million. When that's multiplied by the fatality rate of 14% that Lepi used in 1994, we arrive at an annual death rate of 420,000 for drug errors. Now, the medical errors combined with that, if we put this number in place of Lazarou's 106,000 drug errors and the Institute of Medicine's 98,000 medical errors, you'd have an additional 216,000 deaths, making a total of 999,936 deaths annually. All right, now remember, if you're keeping score here, we have numbers of 1.1 million, 1.0 million, 783,000, 500,000, 250,000, 195,000, and 98,000. Now we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 numbers here. I don't know which number is correct. Neither do you. None of us do. None of these people that are putting these numbers together do. We're trying to arrive at a guesstimate here as to how many people are killed every year by their doctors. And the answer is somewhere between 98,000 and 1.1 million, but we're not quite sure which is the correct number. But it's a bunch. It was so many, in fact, that by 1998 or 99, President Bill Clinton signed legislation to see if they couldn't do something about this iatrogenic disease. Because if it's up around a quarter of a million a year, it's the third largest killer in America. It would rank right behind cancer, which kills a half a million. Now remember that on the charts, it's not even on the radar screen. Nobody even uses the iatrogenic category for calculating deaths in America. But if we did, it would be the third killer. It would be ahead of stroke and two or three others, like AIDS and pneumonia and a few others. Now, that's the shocker. Now, this report here is www.ourcivilization.com. Again, that's www.ourcivilization.com. The enumerating of unnecessary medical events is very important in our analysis. Any medical procedure that is invasive and not necessary must be considered as part of the larger iatrogenic picture. Unfortunately, cause and effect go unmonitored. The figures on unnecessary events represent people or patients who are thrust into a dangerous healthcare system. They are helpless victims. Each one of these 16.4 million lives is being affected in a way that could have fatal consequences. Simply entering a hospital could result in the following. Out of 16.4 million people, here's what happens. 2.1% chance of serious adverse drug reaction. That's 186,000 people. 5% to 6% chance of acquiring a hospital infection. That's 489,500, or right around 500,000 people. Now keep in mind that this 500,000 people that go to the hospital every year and get infected don't all die, but 98,000 of them do. Isn't that what we saw here? Infection. No, 88,000 of them do. 88,000 a year go to the hospital. Let me back up. 16.4 million people go to the hospital. Out of the 16.4 million, 500,000, 500,000 of them come down with an infection. And out of those 500,000 that have the infection, 88,000 of them die. And that's one of eight categories of risk that you run when you go to the hospital. Number three, 4% to 36% chance of having an iatrogenic injury in the hospital, either done by medical error or adverse drug reaction, 1.78 million. A 17% chance of a procedural error, that's 1.3 million people affected by it. All of the statistics above represent a one-year time span, so just imagine the numbers over a 10-year period, such as the Vietnam War. Working with the most conservative figures from our statistics, we project the following 10-year death rates. So now, remember that the 10-year war, 64 to 75, in Vietnam, killed 58,000 people. Well, over 10 years, adverse drug reactions killed 1.06 million. Medical errors kill 0.98 million, that's just a shade under a million. Bed sores kill 1.15 million. The infection, that 0.88 million, that's 880,000. Malnutrition is 1.09 million. Outpatients, 1.99 million. Unnecessary procedures, 371,000, and surgery-related, 320,000. That's a third of a million each. I mean, we're talking about millions upon millions of people killed over a 10-year period. Not 58,000, millions. Now, nobody gets very excited about these millions of people that die in the healthcare system because they all die one at a time anonymously. It's a death in a hospital room. My sister-in-law had cancer, and she died in the hospital room. And there were three or four family members present when she died. We don't know if there was any medical malpractice or iatrogenic events involved in her death. She was terminal. She was going to die. Whether she died that day in that hospital or she died a month or 6 months or a year later, she was going to die. Now, what if when she went to the hospital, she could have lived for another week, 10 days, 2 months, or 2 years, we don't know, but they poisoned her and killed her. Well, then she died at age 56, but she should have lived to be age 57 or 58. That would be an iatrogenic event. Now, I'm not suggesting that my sister-in-law was killed by an iatrogenic event. I don't know that. We don't know. We're not even concerned about it. Because it occurred, and she was going to die anyway. We never investigated. We didn't care about it one way or the other. But the way that comes to light is if an expert, if a panel of experts took a look at her medical history, what drugs was she being given and how was she being cared for in the hospital, they could come to a conclusion that either one, she died of the cancer that she was in the hospital for, you know, or she died from some drug overdose, or she died from bed sores, or she died from some other cause, which means that her life was terminated prematurely by an illegal act, or in any event, by an incompetent act on the part of one or more of the hospital staff. Now, we couldn't get too mad at the hospital because my mother-in-law, she was 88, she went to the hospital and she was terminal. You know, when you get to be 88, you're kind of on the terminal side. And she was in the hospital for about a week and she finally died in there. Now, we're not complaining and saying that she died because the hospital was negligent or that somebody screwed up and gave her the wrong medication. She was an old lady when she was sick, and when people get sick, they rush them to the hospital. And that's why hospitals are places where people die. There's a lot of mortality in hospitals because when you go to the hospital, you're already sick, nigh unto death, or you wouldn't be going to the hospital. Now, in years past, when people got sick and nigh unto death, they didn't send them to the hospital. They stayed at home, and they died at home. Today, they die in the hospital. And like as not, a lot of these numbers, you know, to be the devil's advocate here, probably a lot of these numbers have to do with old people in the hospitals who are going to die anyway, and the nurse screwed up, and we could sit there and say, well, so what? She died this week instead of next week. Because of a foul-up on the part of a nurse, or a doctor, or somebody else. But not all of these cases are that way, and as I'm going to show you when we get into Shirley's Wellness Cafe. So let me change documents here. And let me give you this website. It's called www.shirleys-wellness-cafe. Cafe.com. Kind of a long one. 36-page report. And boy, is it a report. I'm going to flip over here a couple pages. See if I can find this one guy over here that had his lung cut out. So just bear with me here as I flip through a few pages. And I'm going to read some of these excerpts as we progress along of some of the stories that have come down. Assuming, of course, that it's in this article here. I might even be in the wrong article and it's somebody else's article. But you want to get this one down. It's www.shirleys-wellness-cafe.com. I think that this guy with the lung cut out is in a different article. I'll dig it out and I'll give it to you next time, but let me read you some of the story from this investigator's point of view. Now remember, this is a Shirley's Wellness Cafe. Now these are going to be health food people and they're going to exaggerate the numbers on the high side. I'm perfectly satisfied to go with the 250,000 number that came out of the medical journal. I suspect that it's probably double that, and it's closer to 500,000 would be the real number. Just splitting the baby. You got three numbers that's up to 1,000,000, and we've got four numbers that are under, that are 500,000 or under. I'd say just about, if you just, you know, cut this baby in two, I think you'd be right at 500,000. But hell, boys and girls, if we just went with the half of that, 250,000, we know 250,000 people are dying every year from iatrogenic disease. It's probably closer to 500,000. Could be as high as 1,000,000. 250. Let's just take 250, boys and girls, and then let's divide that and by 500. That's how many people fit into a jumbo jet. 250,000. And divide that by 500. That's 500 jumbo jets crashing every year. If you took the 500 and then you divided that by 365, that would be 1.36 jumbo jets a day crashing. Be a jumbo jet and 3 737s with 100 people each in it crashing. Now, you know, that would just blow everybody away. Four airplanes crashed in one day into the trade towers. Remember that? On 9/11? why people went bonkers. They enacted security at $37 billion a year. You know, Homeland Security. They enacted they call that Patriot Act. Launched two wars. I mean, we're spending hundreds of billions of dollars over those four airplanes and two buildings. Nobody is expending a quarter over a death rate. How many people died there in 9/11? I think it was 1,000, 1,500 people. Well, it was more than that. It was more like 3,000 people, just a shade under 3,000, as I recall. 3,000 people. 58,000 died in Vietnam. 250,000 are dying every year. I mean, 58,000 died in Vietnam over 10 years. Boys and girls, that's only 5,800 a year. We're talking about a quarter of a million people dying every year from iatrogenic disease. That's why I say, you know, we Americans suffer from national insanity. We get excited over things that really don't amount to two hoots and a whirlwind. But when something big like this iatrogenic disease comes along, we don't seem to even know that there's a problem. All right, now here's Shirley's Wellness Cafe. It's a free educational website on the Internet since 1996. This site is being continuously updated, so check it often to see what's new. The last update, 12/19/05. Check the list of updates. Contact Shirley about Shirley Home Sitemap, search this site. Use of this site signifies your agreement to the disclaimer. A report by the General Accounting Office in the United States revealed that 51.5% of all drugs introduced between 1976 and 1985, about a 10-year period, had to be relabeled because of serious adverse reactions found after the marketing of these drugs. That tells you, guinea pig, guinea pig. These included heart, liver, and kidney failure, fetal toxicity and birth defects, severe blood disorders, respiratory arrest, seizures, and blindness. The changes to the labeling either restricted a drug's use or added major warnings. Now, that's according to the Food and Drug Administration, our friends at the FDA. 1.5 million Americans were hospitalized in 1978 as a consequence of taking drugs. And some 30% of all hospitalized people are further damaged by their treatments. Every year, an estimated 140,000 Americans are killed because of drug taking, and 1 in 7 hospital beds is taken up by patients who are suffering from adverse drug reactions. Now that's 1 in 7. Every 7th hospital bed is occupied by a patient who is suffering from an adverse drug reaction. Now, drugs, according to the Bible, are called the art of the apothecary. It's a part and parcel with witchcraft, which is a capital felony. Now, I reported to you, I think, last time on the number of people that are taking drugs. 67%. Two-thirds, two out of every three Americans are taking a prescription drug today. Two out of three. And then they went down in numbers from there. Some people are taking as many as 6 of these prescription drugs every day. Hey, boys and girls, I would submit to you that America qualifies as a drug-ridden nation. I mean, if you got two people out of three, two-thirds of your population popping pills, don't you think those people are drug addicts? I think that if you went to those people and say, why don't you just quit taking these drugs cold turkey, they'd look at you like you're some kind of nut. Yet, these very same people would look at a heroin addict and say, you know, you ought to quit taking that heroin. That's bad for you. Hey, you ought to quit that cocaine. That's bad for you. You had to get off that pot. And yet, cocaine, heroin, and pot kill 6,000 people a year. 6,000 people die every year from using illegal drugs a quarter of a million and probably a half a million die from using legal drugs prescribed by their doctors. Well, not just the drugs, these eight iatrogenic events. Now, what do you think of that? Now, we get real excited. We're spending, I think it's $37 billion a year on this homeland security. That's a ton of money. We're spending another God knows how many billions of dollars a year fighting those two wars over in Afghanistan. I think it's $100 billion a year, something like that. Maybe more. I mean, we get real excited, you know, about a few hundred people or a few thousand people getting killed, 3,000, I think, on 9/11. We don't think anything at all about millions of people dying in our healthcare system over here, or two-thirds of our population being drug addicted. And we're not talking about illegal drugs. We're talking about legal drugs put out by the legal cartels. Government-sponsored drugs. All right. Benjamin Rush, M.D. You ever heard that name, Benjamin Rush? Well, Rush was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and he was the personal physician of George Washington. George Washington's doctor. Benjamin Rush, George Washington's doctor, was letting blood out of George Washington the day he died. That's right. George Washington was sitting there with his arm outstretched with a tourniquet on it, and they were bloodletting. He was sick, and so they were letting blood out, letting that toxic poison blood out, and he died. Washington was sitting there feeling his heart, and it quit beating. What a way to go, huh? Well, this guy Rush said, unless we put medical freedom into the Constitution, the time is going to come when medicine will organize into an underground dictatorship. To restrict the art of healing to one class of men and then deny equal privileges to others will constitute the Bastille of medical science. All such laws are un-American and are despotic, and they have no place in a republic. The Constitution of this republic should make special privilege for medical freedom as well as religious freedom. Well, that's quite a little story, I'd say. Benjamin Rush, you know, he says, hey, I think we ought to have religious freedom. I think we ought to have medical freedom. Dr. Schultz, now Schultz is a naturopath out in California. He says, over the last 80 years, organized medical groups and pharmaceutical companies using lawyers, bribes, lobbyists, insurance companies, and the strong arm of the Food and Drug Administration have been very busy. They have corrupted elected officials to pass laws to remove any competition. They have crushed natural doctors, natural medicine, and self-cure. Their goal is to monopolize health care and to make us dependent upon medical doctors and pharmacological drugs. And it has worked. We have watched them pass more and more laws restricting our rights. They have made many healing herbs and foods and even nutrients illegal. Natural health professionals that flourished a few decades ago are now barred by law to practice. And natural doctors, holistic healers, health food store owners, and even family members of the sick have been arrested and jailed for using natural remedies. Now, if you disagree with your doctor regarding the medical treatment of your children, they can be taken away from you and put into a foster home, and you can be arrested for endangering the health and welfare of your own children. There are many people that are jailed every year, put there for disagreeing with medical doctors and medical doctors' policies. In order to break free from the clutches of organized medical crime, pharmacological drug cartels, and this monstrous insurance fraud, we must all work to change the unconstitutional laws that monopolize health care. Dr. Schultz has tried to make changes in Washington and was physically beaten and jailed. He then decided the best way for him to create medical freedom was to take it to the people. His grassroots natural healing crusade. Dr. Schultz believes that we can put the medical and pharmaceutical industries in their place by educating everyone in the healing powers naturally present in the human body and how to use the foods and herbs given to us by God. And most importantly, each of us must stop using and supporting these deadly industries by learning the healthy and natural God-given alternatives. So says Dr. Schultz, master herbalist. Now, the FDA is a partner of the pharmaceutical industry. In an unusually candid comment for a senior government official, Dr. Herbert Ley, he's the former FDA commissioner, made this remark, quote, "The thing that bugs me is that people think the FDA is protecting them. It isn't. What the FDA is doing and what the people think the FDA is doing are as different as night and day." Pharmaceutical corporations accused of genocide before the ICC in The Hague. Pharmaceutical companies including Pfizer, Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, Novartis, Amgen, and AstraZeneca are accused of deliberately preventing life-saving natural alternatives to drug-based treatments from being applied in prevention and cure. A worldwide disinformation campaign undertaken by these companies is said to have caused the deaths of millions of people. I ought to point something out here. I just saw that President Clinton, ex-President Clinton, he's kind of hot and heavy on AIDS. So he went over to China. He founded a foundation or a clinic or something. I think it's a foundation. And what they're trying to do is to save AIDS patients. And so he went over to China, and they're dispensing these expensive drugs that cost $100,000 a year. $100,000 a year here in the United States. So if you've got AIDS here in the United States, you're paying $100,000 a year, probably through Medicare, unless you got some health insurance or private money or something. So Clinton, wanting to save all these Chinese people over here, went to India. And he got the very same drugs that are being used here in the United States for $2,000 a year per patient. You got that? 2% of what it costs in the United States. Now, the drug companies that are making those drugs in India are making a profit on them. I mean, if they weren't making a profit, they wouldn't be in business. So here in the United States, they're making 98% more, or 9,800% more, however you want to calculate it. And so Dan Rather asked Bill Clinton, he said, "Do you think that there's price gouging going on?" Now Clinton, the consummate politician who gets his money from a political campaign from, guess who, pharmaceutical companies, said, "Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that it was price gouging, but I would think that they could produce it for a whole lot less and still make a profit." Now, like as not, the Indian pharmaceutical companies that are putting out these drugs are probably doing it under a licensing agreement. Now, they're not going to sell very many people $100,000 worth of AIDS drugs over in India. But you can sell a lot of people AIDS drugs for $2,000 a year. And I'll bet you it doesn't cost them $50 to turn out those drugs. They're synthetic chemicals. So I'm going to go a step further than President Clinton and tell you that, yes, it's price gouging. It's price gouging to a degree that is totally unconscionable. I mean, I can see keystoning a profit margin, or even in jewelry, 3 keystones, but, you know, 100, 200, 300 keystones? Come on, guys. Let's be intelligent. And especially when you're talking about people's lives. I mean, after all, if they're coming out here saying, "We can save your life for $100,000, is it worth $100,000 to you to save your life? Well, then, buy our chemical drugs. Well, if saving people's lives are their goal, then couldn't they save those people's lives for $2,000 a year and just make a $1,000 profit instead of charging that guy $100,000 and making $99,000 profit. You know, if they do that, maybe another 100, 200, or 500 people could take advantage of that, wouldn't you think? So if you think that the drug companies who say we have to charge these prices because we need the money to research and to find new cures because we're just real concerned about the health, safety, and welfare of people and we just want to save people's life, I say bullshit. And if I offended you, turn the radio off, because that's what it is. Just plain bullshit. All right, guys, let's hang on here for a second while I give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing Shirley'sWellnessCafe.com. It's a 36-page report on iatrogenic disease. You can get a copy of this report from www.shirleys-wellness-cafe.com. Just put a couple of hyphens in Shirley's Wellness Cafe, and that'll get you the 36-page report that you're listening to right now. Now, Shirley also reported Death by Modern Medicine. I've already given you that report, but that's on page 3 and 4. Strange as it may sound, when John D. Rockefeller was actively destroying nature or natural-based medicine in America and setting up Hitler to enforce his IG Farben cartel agreements throughout Europe, the Rockefellers had a naturopathic and homeopathic doctor that were keeping John D. Rockefeller alive well into his 90s. So you go figure. People, please wake up and start taking an active role in your own health. Now, we could have an even higher death rate if we used Dr. Lucian Lippe's 1997 medical and drug error report. I gave you that report already. It could be as high as a million people a year. Probably isn't that high, but it could be. Now, there is corruption in drug research. Melody Peterson's front page investigative report in the New York Times, released simultaneously with PBS broadcast with Bill Moyers, exposed the fraudulent tactics used by the pharmaceutical industry and its advertising agencies to promote their new drugs. Peterson reports how industry exercises control over medical practice and research through covert promotional and financial enticements to doctors. And she reports about corrupt marketing practices that masquerade as research, and pharmaceutical ad agencies, also known as medical education companies, have corrupted the scientific literature to the point that it is totally unreliable. And that's in a book called What Doctors Don't Tell You. Fraud in drug testing. Data fabrication is so widespread, says Dr. Braithwaite, that it is called making in the Japanese pharmaceutical industry, graphiting or dry labeling in the United States. And he further states that pharmaceutical companies face great temptations to mislead health authorities about the safety of their drug products. It is a make-or-break industry. Many companies get virtually all of their profits from just two or three therapeutic winners. Inquiries into scientific fraud in the United States have shown that there is a substantial problem of fraud in safety testing of drugs in the United States, just as it has been documented in Japan. Between 1977 and 1980, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, discovered 62 doctors who had submitted manipulated or downright falsified clinical data. A study conducted by the Food and Drug Administration has revealed that one in five doctors investigated who carry out field research of new drugs had invented the data that they sent to the drug companies and then pocketed the fees. Citing case examples, Dr. Braithwaite states that the problem is that most fraud in clinical trials is unlikely to even be detected. Most cases which do come to public attention only do so because of extraordinary carelessness by the criminal physician. Now, the main principles governing the pharmaceutical business with disease is not in the financial interests of the pharmaceutical industry to prevent common diseases. The maintenance and the expansion of diseases is a precondition for the financial growth of this industry. I'm going to put brackets around that one. Hold it right there. You heard about this new avian bird flu? Well, you're not hearing anything about it now, but about two or three weeks ago, it was in the news. I mean, every night, it was in the news. That's what I call the public disinformation. Now, I don't doubt that this bird flu exists, and I don't doubt that at some point in time in the future that it's going to break into the human population. In fact, I think that it's already been created by the drug companies or by the United States government or by somebody else, and that it's going to be unleashed. But it's not going to be unleashed until the companies that are producing the two companies that have the patents on the cure for that disease. It's not really a cure, it's a treatment. Remember? Tamiflu? And they only had enough of it for, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 million people in Britain and 1 million or 2 here in the United States. So here's what they're going to do. Now, just mark my words and see whether or not I'm a prophet. They're going to wait a year or two until they get this Tamiflu antidote, and they sell it to Britain and France. They sell it to all these governments. I mean, by the billions of doses, so that they've made billions and billions of dollars. Then they'll cut loose with the flu so that they can use it up. And it's going to be one of the biggest money makers that the pharmaceutical industry has ever seen. It's a tailor-made disease. They have created the disease, created the treatment for it, and they've test-marketed it. They found out that everybody is just terrified of the flu. People will line up to get flu shots. People will line up to buy this Tamiflu. In fact, it's selling on the web right now. It's illegal. It's a prescription drug. It's illegal, and they're selling it for 10 times what you can buy it for in the legitimate market, which is probably 10 times what it costs to produce, maybe 100 times more. Now, you talk about crime. You talk about organized crime. You talk about a mafia. You take your government, coupled with the FDA, coupled with the pharmaceutical industry, coupled with 700,000 doctors here in the United States, and we have a medical mafia that is cashing in on the gullibility of people. Well, you can't blame them for that. I mean, business is business. It's nothing personal. And if we killed you in the process, it was an accident. We didn't mean to kill you. We know that there are going to be a few casualties, but hey, listen, this is just business, and after all, money is money, and we're just doing it for the money. In recent years, the pharmaceutical industry has been exposed as a multi-trillion dollar investment business with disease, the future of which is dependent upon the continuation and the expansion of diseases, the very existence of the pharmaceutical industry. The existence, do you get that, of the pharmaceutical industry is currently threatened. Damage claims from the deadly side effects of one single drug are bringing down Bayer, the flagship of the entire industry. The ensuing domino effect would inevitably cripple this largest investment sector on Earth. And at the same time, scientific advances in non-patentable natural health offer effective, safe, and affordable alternatives to the multi-trillion dollar market of patented drugs. I want to point out to you that I didn't get my flu shot this year. I'm an old man. I'm at risk, they tell me, and I didn't get my flu shot. I'm going to stay as far away from those quacks as I can get. I'm not concerned about the flu. I work on my immune system. And yes, indeed, one of these days I'm going to die. But if there's any way I can do it, or any way I can swing it, I'm going to die from old age with my shoes on in my own bed, as far away from the hospital and as far away from the medical profession as I can get. The survival of the pharmaceutical industry is dependent upon the elimination by any means of any and every effective natural health therapy. These natural and non-patentable therapies have become the treatment of choice for millions of people despite the combined economic, political, and media opposition of the world's largest investment industry. To protect the strategic development of its investment business against the threat from effective natural and non-patentable therapies, the pharmaceutical industry has, over an entire century, used the most unscrupulous methods, such as they withhold life-saving health information from millions of people. And it's simply unacceptable that today so few people know that the human body cannot produce vitamin C and lysine, two key molecules for connective tissue stability and disease prevention. So yeah, you guessed it, old Georgie here is busy taking lysine and vitamin C. That one of the unscrupulous methods, number two, is discrediting natural health therapies. The most common way is through global public relations campaigns organized by the pharmaceutical cartels that spread lies about the alleged side effects of natural substances, molecules that have been used by God and nature for thousands of years. And three, they ban by law the dissemination of information about natural health therapies. And to that end, the pharmaceutical industry has placed its lobbyists in key political positions, in key markets, and leading drug export nations. So says Dr. Rath, Health Foundation. It's also known as mass murder in medicine by Dr. Len Horowitz. discussing iatrogenicide. Dr. Len Horowitz delves into the darkest side of drug-based medicine, including the mass killing and poisoning of people for profit and politics. This free program is dedicated and donated to grassroots activists and organizations worldwide working to stop this ongoing medically induced mass murder that Dr. Horowitz christens iatrogenicide. Find out why trusted vaccines, blood supplies, and drugs play a primary role in what amounts to genocide for profit, psychosocial control, and even depopulation. We urge you to make copies of this exceptional 45-minute presentation and help spread this recording and stop the killing. To order bulk quantities of this tape for dissemination by activists and activist organizations, please call toll-free 1-888-508-4787 or order over the internet at www.AmericanRedDoubleCross.com. That's www.AmericanRedDoubleCross.com. Now, as you can see, I'm on page 8 of 36 of Shirley's Wellness Cafe. And obviously, these people are into health and health foods and medicine and alternative care and one thing and another. And these are all little ads, little short paragraphs in here that deal with books, tapes, web pages, and information. For instance, if I came to you today, right now, and you and I were having a conversation, and you said to me, well, George, I'm not feeling too good. And I said, well, Bob, what seems to be the problem? He said, well, George, I've got dry mouth. And I said, well, Bob, if you've got dry mouth, you're dehydrated, and you need to drink water. Do you know that's a felony? Do you know that's a crime? Do you know that would be practicing medicine without a license? That I could be prosecuted and jailed for 5 years for practicing medicine without a license because I diagnosed you and I prescribed the cure. Diagnosis and prescription is against the law unless you're a licensed medical professional. Now, you know, when I was a kid, my granny would be talking over coffee or tea with Mrs. Birchfield and Mrs. Johnson, and they'd be talking about kids and what they did, you know, when little Johnny had pneumonia or when little Betty had the measles, and about how they applied mustard plasters and how they used this deworming tonic over here and how they wormed their kids. I mean, they're talking about medicine all the time. They were constantly talking about diagnosis and cures. It was a part of what we called in America our First Amendment right to free speech. Hey, boys and girls, you don't have that anymore. Let me wake you up. Let me slap you across the face a couple of times. Wake up, smell the coffee. It's against the law to do that. So tuck it away in your heart. Now, for you to open a store, you know, and say to somebody, well, there are 9 cures to cancer, and cancer is relatively easy to cure. Listen, cancer is a 500 billion, that's spelled with a B, 500 B, boy, billion dollar a year industry. And then you can cure cancer for about, oh hell, $30-$40. I mean, skin cancer is fairly easy with Indian black salve. If you've got it internally, you probably need Essiac. If it's really kind of serious, you know, and you've got liver problems and you've got jaundice or something, you know, yeah, you might even need a little nutritional therapy to go along with the program. And I'm not the guy to tell you how to do that. I'm just here as a reporter to tell you that it's available. And that they're called real cures. I mean, you know, let's suppose, let me tell you a little story about this. There used to be a lady by the name of Ann Wigmore. She ran a clinic up in Boston, Massachusetts. She was an old lady. And she discovered that wheatgrass has the nutrients in it that kill tumors, kill cancers. So my wife had cancer back in 1978, and so she built onto the side of the house here. The greenhouse is still here. You students that have been here to the school can remember the greenhouse. Well, she grew barley grass out there, and for 2 years and 8 months, she ate barley grass and 6 almonds a day. Oh, she ate a couple other things, you know, some vitamins and minerals and stuff. Took 2 years and 8 months to cure the cancer that she was diagnosed by the allopathic medical professionals as having about 3 to 6 months left to live. And she says, okay, I got 3 to 6 months. What can you do for me? And they said, well, we can put you on chemotherapy. We can operate. We can do lots of things. And what's the price of that? It's about $100,000. So she said, well, wait a minute. See if I understand this. You want me to pay you $100,000. How long am I going to live? And they said, we can probably extend your life to about 18 months. 18 months. For $100,000, you can extend my life for 18 months, but I'm going to die at the end of 18 months. That's right. Okay, and if I do absolutely nothing, what's going to happen? Well, then you're going to die in 6 months. So this $100,000 then is designed at the rate of about $8,500 a month to keep me alive for an extra year. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And my hair's going to fall out, and I'm going to be real sick and nauseated, and I'm going to go through great pain, agony, and suffering as I go through this chemotherapy here, right? Yeah, that's right. That's the way that goes. Okay. So she said, well, I'll tell you what. I think I might as well go home, make peace with God, and give the $100,000 to my husband and the children because they're probably going to need it just as much and maybe more than you when I'm gone. Because they ain't going to have a mama. And so she came home, and she got to doing some research, you know, through the alternative circuit, and she built a greenhouse on here, and she went through the Wigmore program, and in 2 years and 8 months, she'd been cancer-free from that day to this. Now, she had a relapse in 84, went out to Oregon, and Dr. Lester cured her a second time. Had a little more professional help. She's been cancer-free from that day to this. Now, listen. Cancer is relatively easy to cure, and there's a bunch of people around the country that know how to cure it. I don't know of a single medical doctor, border to border or coast to coast, that can do that. All they can do is tell you, we don't know what causes it. We don't know how to cure it. But for $100,000, we've got a treatment. But you're going to die. Now, if you had a car and you brought that car to me and I said, I don't know what's wrong with your car, and I can't fix it, but for $25 an hour, I will work on your car until you go broke, would you buy from me? Now, that's why I say that America is suffering from national insanity. Because in this country, people will spend $100,000 to have bypass surgery or $100,000 for cancer therapy, knowing full well that they're going to die at the end of the program within a year or two. And you know what happens when you have cancer and you do absolutely nothing? Your average lifespan is 5 years. And when you go to the medical doctor and you do something and spend $100,000, it's 18 months. I say, save the $100,000, do nothing, and live 3 times longer, and die in style. Hey, I'm out of time. We got to leave it right there. We'll be back tomorrow night talking about iatrogenic disease. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And all of these law hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We're going to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.